training for spin awareness without actually doing spins. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. You can find that on the web. Also has a flight school in the Buffalo, New York area. And Bob, we appreciate, as always, you're giving up a few minutes for our listeners today.
Well, thanks, Paul. I enjoy being with you.
One of the areas in which your views, Bob, have been kind of controversial within the flight training community are training for spins. And you wrote an interesting piece on that from your point of view in the most recent edition of Over the Airwaves, the February edition, called Spins, Can't You Feel Them Coming? Tell us a little bit about the incident that you related in that story and how it affects your philosophy on training for this kind of event.
Well, each issue that I put together for Over the Airwaves, one of the first sources that I go to is the NTSB accident reports after the probable cause findings have been issued. And more often than not, and I'm working on one right now where an RV-6A pilot took off, did a high-performance climb out from a local airport with his friends and family watching, and pitched up to a steep altitude. Unfortunately, the airplane stalled, rolled, and then bore a hole into the runway in front of family and friends. And a classic stall spin accident. And in this particular case, it was a very experienced pilot in terms of logbook hours. But one must wonder whether or not that individual truly had a physical sense, a feeling, the ability to detect when a spin is likely to occur. And one of the things that we need to do is, in my opinion, is more spin training, almost to the point of requiring it for all private pilots. The difficulty, though, is FAR 91.9 that prohibits many of our production airplane bay from being put into intentional spins, certainly in the normal category. It's difficult to find an airplane, a training airplane today, where we can legally comply with FAR 91.9 and put that, give that student an opportunity to experience a real spin. But there are two exercises that we can do in any most normally certified airplane or airplane certified in the normal category, and that is very simply accelerated stalls and cross-controlled stalls. Mm-hmm. Basically, they are stalls that are brought in while the airplane is in a banked attitude. For example, a 30-degree bank left or right. We know that increases the stall speed, so we simply take the airplane, the student, into a 30-degree bank, ask the student to reduce the speed. That increases the pitch angle to induce a stall at a speed somewhat higher than he is or she is normally accustomed to. When that happens, the airplane will stall, and if there's any lack of coordination, the airplane, the nose will roll to one side of the inside portion of the turn. It will roll down, and immediately the airplane will enter the first turn of a spiral. And I'll emphasize the word spiral. The difference between a spin and a spiral, of course, is that they're very similar in how they feel initially to the pilot and the passenger. A spiral, however, the airplane is increasing airspeed and is not stalled. And thereby doing that, we can induce the same kind of feelings that you have with a spin without actually spinning the airplane. The other exercise that I like to do, and one that will achieve the same result, is to go into a power on stall, full power stall, but we do this with our feet flat on the floor rather than on the rudders to correct for adverse yaw produced by the four left turning tendency. So we tell the student, let's hold a cardinal heading north, south, east, or west. Put the airplane into a classic departure or power on stall, but with their feet flat on the floor. Well, as the airplane pitches up and approaches the stall, we know what's happening. The airplane now is badly yawed to the left in a single-engine airplane with a left-turning tendencies. And so now we have a stall with a yaw, which all of a sudden, as soon as that stall break occurs, the inside wing will fall, the nose will drop, and we will then enter the first or second turn of a spiral. again, the airplane at this point is not stalled, therefore it's not spinning, but it is in the first or second turn of a spiral. That feeling alone will inoculate a student to what happens when an airplane approaches a stalled condition in any form of a yawed flight attitude. If we provided all primary students and instrument students genuine cross-control stall experiences, genuine accelerated stall experiences, we can affect, in my opinion, much of the same thing we would affect if we provided everybody with spin training without actually subjecting the airplane to a spin.
Well, and the way you termed it in your newsletter, Bob, was that we don't need to actually place an airplane in a spin to develop the required kinesthetic senses that precede them. What I would ask you, though, is there not a second step to that? And that is that, you know, again, we're kind of in the learn to avoid it mechanism here, which I think gets some students into trouble when they get out and flying in the real world. Is it not important for somebody to go out and find an instructor with a Citabria who will take them up and do some actual aerobatic stuff or actually, you know, spin an aircraft and teach them how to recover from these things?
Oh, no question about it. I mean, that's ideal training. I was 4 years as a flight instructor before I went down to Fighter Combat International and to do that very same thing down in Mesa, Arizona in their Extra 300s. I came back with a whole new perspective on what we can and cannot do in an airplane. And it was through my experiences there where I discovered just how a real stall, what it really feels like in an airplane like an Extra 300 as opposed to a trainer with very benign flying characteristics. Any flight instructor will begin to bite his or her lower lip just as soon as the student is turning from base to final, allows the airspeed to get just a little too low, and this instructor is saying, you know, airspeed, airspeed, and the student seems to be oblivious to the risks that their actions are putting them through. And they'll go through their entire primary training oblivious to that risk. And then they go out, they get their certificate, they're on their own, they're still oblivious to that risk. Now, how can we fix that? Well, we take them up to a safe altitude. We put them through a series of cross-controlled and accelerated stalls, and they won't forget it. If done properly, they will not forget the feeling that they just experienced. And again, we're not spinning the airplane. We're just putting it into the first or second turn of a spiral, perfectly legal, perfectly safe maneuver. But I'll tell you what, after a student has gone through that exercise, you will never, in my experience with my own students, my problem now is to get them to slow down on that turn from base to final because they are so sensitized to the possible risk of a stall spin. Well, given an error, would we rather have them turning in the pattern a little too quickly with a pitch attitude that's well below the stall, a critical angle, or would we rather have them on the opposite end of that spectrum? There's no question as to where we want them.
Well, there's no question to where most training leaves them at this point, which is on the wrong end of that. So.
Yeah, and when they make that mistake by themselves, very often it's fatal. In fact, we're still experiencing about 50 stall spin accidents a year, and they should simply not happen. Anybody who's gone through the kind of training that I've just described will be inoculated against that scenario. They will have such kinesthetic feelings that they can sense whenever they're getting that close, and even the instrument pilot. The instrument pilot, his or her eyes will be on that airspeed indicator. They'll know what their pitch attitude is, and when they start turning, they'll know how precipitously close they could be coming to a spin. And in IMC conditions, I mean, that is unrecoverable.
We're talking today with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, and we'll be back with more in a moment. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack, and my guest is Bob Miller, CFI, editor of Over the Airwaves, which you can find on the web, and he has his own flight training operation running in the Buffalo, New York area. Bob, one of the things you wrote about in the most recent edition of Over the Airwaves was traffic pattern directions. Get them right, parentheses, left, question mark. And I think that maybe a lot of people who first start airport hopping, maybe early in their solo experience or early after they're certificated and get their private certificate, maybe don't pay enough attention to this. How big a problem is this?
You know, on the grand scheme of things, of all of the attendant risks, I don't think it's a major problem, other than the fact that we do know that most accidents, certainly mid-air collisions, occur in or and around the traffic pattern. In the particular case that I was writing about, it had to do with a student pilot who was making a cross-country flight to an airport that he was approaching from one direction that made it very nice and easy for him to enter the pattern from the right side, from a right downwind as opposed to the left downwind. In effect, he was running the pattern backwards. And unbeknownst to him, apparently, there was an individual in another similar airplane, a Cessna 172, private pilot, doing just proper turns in the pattern, touch-and-go landings. And when the student pilot turned on final, he overtook the private pilot in front of him. The airplanes collided, and there were fatal consequences. Why does this happen? Heaven only knows why this happens. Why an individual will enter a pattern in the wrong direction? In most cases, I believe it's simply they're not familiar with the airport that they're going to. They may train at a pattern at an airport where there are right-hand patterns, and not knowing that the rest of the world is turning left-hand. But one thing that I try to instill is the fact that when we do realistic training, cross-country type training, even at the primary pilot level, this is another excellent example where awareness of the traffic pattern direction is developed, because we're going very often into airports, non-towered airports, that we're not familiar with. We assume it's a left-hand pattern, but it very well could be a right-hand pattern. This is an area that more attention needs to be developed with primary students, taking them away from their own homedrome airports where they're going day in and day out, week after week, session after session, never experiencing new airports.
Bob, homedrome sounds very much like humdrum. Have you ever noticed that?
Well, yeah, homedrome and humdrum are very similar. I mean, I know in my own area up here, I'm in and out of the Western New York area all the time, and, you know, I'm listening on the radio, and, you know, it's the same flight schools flying at the same airports all the time, day in, day out, same airports. It's almost like they have it down to a recipe for optimal proficiency at a given airport. Naturally, that's probably the airport where the student is going to take his or her practical test. And so if our objective is to get students through the test, get them passed, then train them at the place where their test is likely to be performed. That gets them through the test, Paul, but clearly it doesn't get them through the kind of realism that they will need when they have their certificate and they're out on their own, as this particular incident that I wrote about attests to.
All right, Bob, you quote FAR 91-126. When approaching to land in an airport without an operating control tower in Class G airspace, each pilot of an airplane must make all turns to the left unless the airport displays approved light signals or visual markings indicating that turns should be made to the right. What are some of the most obvious clues we'll get if we're flying to an unfamiliar small airport that they might have a right traffic pattern?
Well, the first is the sectional. The sectional will have a little RP under the airport description that stands for right pattern, or right pattern runway RP23, which would say right runway 23 has a right-hand pattern. That's the first. The second, now, as I come back to the first, let me do this again. We're flying lots of airplanes today that are GPS-equipped, that have databases in their GPS that tells us lots of things about the airport. But this little fact may not appear on the GPS database. The database may have runway lengths, radio frequencies, but it might not have the direction of the pattern. So we're caution is advised. Carry a sectional, study the sectional before landing. Number two, listen on the radio. Listen on the radio. People will call. This is the reason why we say I'm on a left downwind rather than I'm downwind. Mm-hmm. I'm turning left base rather than just base. If there's no radio activity going on, call in the open. ABC Airport, 4720 Yankees, 5 to the north. Airport advisories, wait for a response. If we have a response, then ask, is the pattern right or is the pattern left? That's number two. Number three, if we're genuinely not certain and can't pick it up from the sectional, we can't get anybody up on the radio, fly at least 500 feet above the traffic pattern, fly directly over the airport, and look for some markings on the ground. The devices around a wind tee very often will point to the direction that the pattern is in. And then lastly, if definitely unsure, then make the assumption, if you have to make an assumption, enter a left-hand pattern and watch very carefully and see that you're not running downstream. There are lots of things that we can do, but I think the sectional is number one. As I said, number two is listen and listen on the radio. Number three, just go out and look to see what kind of devices might be pointing in the direction of the pattern when we fly over it.
Well, and a somewhat related issue, too, is that the pattern might be right or might be left at a given airport based on what runway is in use, and you can't always assume, based on an ATIS, that that's going to be what's in use. So you got to check that out first, too.
No question. Paseco, the first stop that we make on the Adirondack trip that we spoke about before in earlier sessions, one runway is right. The same runway is right-hand pattern in one direction, left-hand pattern in the other direction because of steep terrain on one side of the airport. So there are reasons why patterns are set up the way they are, but sometimes they're not quite so obvious. They may be set up in a way because of a nearby airport that would conflict with that airport's pattern if we did it in the traditional left-hand sense.
Talking with Bob Miller, who is a CFI and who puts out Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. You can find out more at overtheairwaves.com. Bob, we'll look for you again next Monday, and we really appreciate these visits.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.